North Dakota ranchers upset about Argentine beef imports are getting a rally cry from the North Dakota Farmers Union. Minnesota Republican voters are getting a smaller field of governor candidates to choose from after another one drops out. And this poor guy, oh my gosh, I would too. Local residents who have Somali roots are not getting much hope that criminal charges might be coming after a threatening letter. And U.S. Olympic curling fans are getting reasons to celebrate this week in Italy after a Duluth team clinched a historic medal. Good morning, my friend. Steve Holsham here with you for the Steve Holsham Show on a beautiful Tuesday morning here in the Valley. It is February 10th, 2026. The Minnesota State High School girls softball team was still won by a guy, and we are still here every morning to remind you of that and bring you all kinds of interesting insight and information from this crazy world around us. Hope that you are enjoying this time as well. I understand that my friends out in Watford City might be getting 50 degrees sometime later this week. I heard that earlier today. That sounds pretty darn good. We might touch 40 here in the Red River Valley coming up, at least the Southern Valley, later this week. Wherever you are today, whatever you are doing, I hope that the day is off to a great start for you. Maybe your day is just ending. Maybe you just worked your shift and headed home and going to hit the hay in a few minutes. Maybe you're halfway through. Whatever the situation is for you, I'm so glad that you chose to give a little bit of time to hang out with me today. I do not take this lightly. There are a lot of places you can be at this time of day. Get your information, perspective, conversation, hopefully even a little bit of humor along the way. And we're glad that you chose to hang out with us. Addison Loger, our producer today. Addison's doing double duty this week. He's also doing the morning show. And so poor Addison, who normally gets up at about noon, or that's kind of was the trend until we moved the show to the morning. Now, how are you? Are you doing okay in there? Do I need to send a Red Bull in your direction?
You know what? You are not the first person to ask me that. And if I told you the combined amount of sleep I've gotten between last night and the night before, I think everyone would be disappointed and impressed.
Okay.
I won't reveal those numbers. It's low. It's a single-digit number for sure.
All right. Well, we're going to try to keep it very low-key for you today, my friend.
Calm show.
Yeah.
We're smooth.
Yeah, a couple of guests, a couple audio clips, but nothing hopefully too crazy. So thank you, my man, for doing what you're doing here today. All right, let's get to it with the Morning Wire. These are the stories, the headlines, the statistics, the pieces of info that I would like you to know here as we get going with the traditional business day, those of us who are working one. Rapid-fire storylines, semi-automatic storylines, rapid-fire headlines, whatever you want to call it. Just a lot of stuff to get your day started. Let's go. Sunrise this morning in the Red River Valley, 7:38. Sun will set at 5:44. Here in the Central Time Zone, we will gain 3 minutes and 2 seconds of daylight today. Very nice. Very nice. In the markets today, well, things looking good to start. The Dow came flying out of the gates. Another record high today. We're up 337 points in early trading at 50,472. S&P 500 up 18 at 6,983. NASDAQ up 56 at 23,294. WTI crude oil this morning up 16 cents, 64.52. That's going to come in handy for a conversation we're going to have with Congresswoman Julie Fedorchuk here in a little bit. So remember that, WTI crude oil, right around $65 a barrel. Gold today down $18 an ounce, silver down 45 cents, and Bitcoin down about $1,500. AAA says average price of a gallon of regular unleaded gas nationwide is $2.92. That's up 1 cent from yesterday. North Dakota average price $2.55, Minnesota $2.63, South Dakota, 262, and we might have a few people in our audience out in Montana today. 274 be the price for a gallon of unleaded out your way. Diesel fuel at 365, unchanged from yesterday. In the news today, WDAY Radio with an interesting update and an interesting story. Moorhead police say they have determined nothing criminal happened in relation to a letter sent to the executive director of the Immigrant Development Center. Her name is Fosia Addy. She is of Somali descent. She's one of us. She's a faith, family, freedom girl, a real conservative. And she said, we are concerned because not everybody is what you hear about with the Twin Cities Somali people doing what they're doing. Well, she said, we got a letter at the place that I work at saying that Fosia herself and the people there are responsible to organize the known illegal aliens to deport themselves, and your actions are being watched. But Morehead police say the department cannot find anything illegal in that letter, and they have not seen an increase in threats against immigrants, immigrant-owned businesses, or nonprofits serving immigrants in recent memory. So nothing criminal there in that. Thought that was an interesting update there. Court documents, according to Valley News Live, show that a Florida woman has been charged after firing multiple shots at a home in West Fargo and leading police on a pursuit last Friday. Brittany Glennon, 35 years of age, a Florida resident, arrested following the incident on the 3300 block of Veterans Boulevard. Police say she fired multiple shots of vehicles parked outside a residence. Witnesses said they heard 3 to 4 shots fired in the area after a disturbance involving a female suspect. Nobody was hurt in any of the shots that were fired there, but that's something you're not used to here in our community. Sadly, we've gotten more used to it recently. The Forum Today reports that a judge has dismissed a child sex abuse case against a former West Fargo High School girls swimming coach. Judge Reed Brady dismissed a gross sexual imposition case against 40-year-old Ronald Hain Jr. on charges that he allegedly assaulted a child in late January, giving the girl a swimming lesson at a private pool in Fargo. Police claimed in court documents the video showed Hain inappropriately touched the girl. Nobody else was in the pool area at that time. But the prosecutors filed their motion to dismiss the case because the prosecutors were not able to meet with the child and their family in preparation for the trial, and the case can't move forward without this critical testimony. Boy, there's a lot of questions that come up in this one here. Predominantly for me, is this something that the family said in the end, you know what, we were kind of barking up the wrong tree here? Or maybe the questions are more about, okay, maybe the victim doesn't want to testify, but the victim's a kid. Maybe the family can, but maybe the family doesn't want to do this. I don't know. Very interesting story. I just thought that was worth sending your way here this morning. WDAY Radio reports that President Trump has signed an executive order quadrupling the amount of beef imported from Argentina. And the Argentina beef ministry says this is going to be a very good thing for us. It's going to expand our export market by 100,000 tons. And that'll be about $800 million worth to them. President, though, the new president of North Dakota Farmers Union, Matt Perdue, said that the administration is claiming this is going to lower grocery bills, but it will push down the prices paid to American ranchers, not the grocery store prices paid by consumers. And this is why this plan has garnered nearly unanimous opposition from U.S. cattle producers. Interesting. If you are a cattle producer, I know we've got some listening out on KTGO country out Ray, Powers Lake, Watford City area. Would love to hear from you today, 271-1100. That's the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. They've recently expanded and can get you in fast. They now offer counseling, occupational therapy, physical therapy, and a nurse practitioner. Make an appointment. Get in soon at valleychristian.co. Here's a sad story for you. Former St. Cloud City Councilmember Jeff Johnson has suspended his campaign for Minnesota governor. The reason is his daughter was stabbed to death over the weekend. Police say 22-year-old Hallie Tobler was killed Saturday, February 7th in St. Cloud. Her husband, 23-year-old Dylan Tobler, is in the hospital under police custody. The candidate Johnson said that he's suspending his campaign. Yesterday we told you Dr. Scott Jensen also ending his campaign. What a horrible deal. I read a little bit more about this. Sounds like there has been a history of violence. And police arrived to a residence, found the daughter dead of stab wounds, and the guy had suffered some wounds himself, but he is expected to live, and he is now in police custody. What a horrific story. Oh, my word. It has been reported by Reuters that Pam Bondi and the Department of Justice have charged 158 anti-ICE agitators with federal crimes to date. And one more for you here. The full numbers to date are now in on the Super Bowl halftime shows. NFL had 135 million live viewers, they say, and 97 million replays, 232 million. Turning Point USA says our max was about 11 million live, and there have been about 10 million replays, about 21 million. So 232 to 21 million. Those are the numbers there. When we come back, story of the day, don't go anywhere. If you need a new garage door or fast, reliable repairs, OnTrack Garage Door has you covered. They specialize in commercial, residential, and farm shop doors, plus expert spring replacements and door repairs. OnTrack Garage Door is proud to be veteran-friendly and grounded in strong Christian values, quality work, honest service, and a team you can trust. Let them get you on the right track with OnTrack. Call 701-793-4246 today. Before we get to story of the day, we always want to try to work in a phone call when we can. So let's do that now. Go to the Valley Christian Counseling and phone line. John in West Fargo wants to talk NDSU football. Good morning, John.
Yeah, good morning, Steve. Enjoy your show a lot. You made mention yesterday that NDSU was rated higher than any of the Mountain West teams in the Sagarin ratings.
Yes, sir.
What do you make of that? Is this even going to be a challenging conference for the Bison, or what's your thoughts on it?
Oh boy, you're asking a sports guy who loves to talk football a question I could go on for 5 minutes. NDSU will do fine in that conference. Will they be? A number of national people are saying NDSU is going to be the team to beat day one. I think that's a little unfair. New Mexico took Minnesota to overtime in their bowl game, and Minnesota had a decent team last year. But this is not a conference that NDSU is going to struggle in mightily. I think, you know, if you take a look at your top three, you've got UNLV, you got New Mexico. Hawaii had a pretty good year last year, but they've typically not been that kind of a team. So NDSU is definitely a top three team. I would expect that they would be challenging for a conference title fairly early, which would be very interesting because the Mountain West conference title game is usually the game that sends one team to a potential for a national playoff. And we're not sure how that's all going to pan out. We've got Matt Larson coming up actually in just about 10 minutes, and that's one of the number things we'll be talking to him about. John, thanks for giving a call today. Appreciate you weighing in on the show here today. And it's going to open up a ton of very interesting non-conference game possibilities, so you might finally see that NDSU-Alabama game. All right, story of the day. This is one that I think is one that most people sort of glance over. But a major U.S. oil refiner is leaving California, and you won't believe all the ways that this is hurting the state. Valero is the company, and they have a refinery in the Bay Area. And they had planned, about a year ago, they said, we're going to shut this down because it's impossible to try to do any kind of fossil fuels here in California. Just too much headwinds from the state. Well, they're shutting down their plant in Benicia, I guess is specifically the city it's located in. They're shutting it down 4 months earlier than they planned. And they are saying that not only do they want out, but they're willing to take a massive write-off and basically leave the old facility behind. They're not even going to try to sell it. It's a 145,000-barrel-a-day refinery. And experts say it's going to send fuel prices skyrocketing in California, where Californians already pay the second highest gas price in the country, behind only Hawaii, where that kind of makes sense, right? You're going to have to bring that by a tanker a long way to get over there. The average price in California is about $4.25 a gallon, according to AAA. Refineries, according to New York Post, are fleeing the Golden State in I wouldn't say large number because there weren't that many already, but just a high percentage are leaving because regulations there drive operating costs 25 to 35% higher than the national average. So think about that. That's just your regulations added on top to everything else. Chevron recently moved its operations from the Bay Area to Texas. Phillips 66 powered down its refinery, 140,000 barrels a day, in October. And experts say as these refineries go dark, more Californians are also going to skip town there because the oil and gas industry in California, as of a year ago, supported more than 535,000 jobs. 535,000 people work in the oil and gas industry in California. And every refiner in the state is moving out. The economic impact is massive, even for a state as big as California. $338 billion gets pumped into the state's economy every year. And Valero now is not even going to try to sell the refinery. They've just had enough. And they're moving out. And they've been pretty public about it, saying that it's these regulations, and they said also some fines were passed along to them for things that would never have been fined, say, in North Dakota or something like that. Now, all of this happens at a time when the state assembly is making things worse. They passed a controversial road charge bill that would launch a study on a new tax last week, despite pushback from critics who are suspicious of another pinch on their wallets. The Democrat-backed proposed mileage tax would replace the gas tax with a per-mile fee. Yeah, we're just going to change how we tax you, and we're going to make it sound better. It's a per-mile fee. It's not a gas tax. And the industry says that, no, this isn't the industry. This is actually state research. Means it could cost California drivers an extra $1,026 a year. And the charge could run 2 to 9 cents a mile for what they're talking about doing. So it could be as much as 9 cents a mile you'd have to pay. Oh, my gosh. And they say the average California driver puts on about 11,400 miles annually. But what about your shipping companies, your transportation companies? What about your Ubers? I mean, anybody that's got to drive anywhere for anything is going to see prices go up in California, and they're already ridiculous there. Very interesting there. And California, all this time, has a $3 billion budget deficit. $3 billion. Because they have to pay for all their social programs. So what are they going to do? They're going to take it from the people. It's the only thing they can do. Remember, friend, anytime someone tells you, well, government's got all this money, no, no. Government has only the money that they've taken from you and me. And if you live in California, it's a beautiful state. It's amazing how great California is. But oh my word. And there's some good common sense patriots in California too. I know that because we met a few when we were there a few years ago. But I mean, what are you going to do here? They're taking a one-time loss of $1.1 billion. They call it an impairment charge. Just to walk away. So their balance sheet is being lopped off. Their company instantly got $1.1 billion less valuable out of all of this there. They got an $82 million fine recently for what the Bay Area called toxic emissions. And Valero said, we've got evidence here that this isn't going to go, but we can't get our case heard by anybody on this thing there. So in Benicia, they have 420 high-paying full-time jobs that are gone. Just like that, you're gone. 420 of them. And that's going to take a hit because the refinery provides 20% of the city of Benicia's budget, $12 million annually. Yowza. This is amazing. And they're saying that some industry sites are saying that gas prices could hit $8 to $12 a gallon late summer, when you get peak travel season going on there. Wow. They decided it was cheaper to pay $1 billion to leave the state than stay there and be treated the way they were being treated. I thought that was story of the day because they started shutting down on Saturday. Crazy stuff going on right there. All right, when we come back, Matt Larson is here and NDSU's athletic director. After the big announcement yesterday, when do we get to play Alabama? Well, I do believe that Matt Larson is a happy man this week, if for no other reason than the fact he doesn't have to go on shows like this and have people like me say, Matt, when is a FBS move ever going to happen? Because I don't know how many times this poor man has heard that question over the years. Well, that question was answered yesterday. And the answer to the question was yesterday. NDSU is officially an FBS football program, as the school announced officially yesterday, that it has moved up to the FBS level and has instant membership in the Mountain West Conference. And Matt, after a crazy Monday, has been kind enough to give me a few more minutes here today. Matt, congratulations. I know this is a lot of hard work and a lot of, working the phone lines and a lot of anticipation all come together because of a lot of effort from a lot of people behind the scenes. Congratulations, Matt.
Well, thanks, Steve. I appreciate it. It has definitely been a long road. I may have mentioned it yesterday in the press conferences. I remember my first week on the job here 11 and a half plus years ago. And that was always the question, is when are we going FBS, FBS? And so, yes, a good byproduct of this decision. I don't have to answer that anymore. But I think the reality, too, is like, you know, now the real work starts, right? The pomp and circumstance is over. And, you know, we have work to do, build a schedule, fundraise, all those things. But really exciting. And the excitement stretches beyond just the football program. I mean, our campus, our community, the state. The reaction has been really, really good, and not just locally, but nationally. And we kind of anticipated that, but it's been off the charts. So really pleased.
Well, I suppose if we're going to continue having fun with the questions, when do we get to play Alabama? I'll throw that one your way. I'm sure everybody is wondering, so I'll start with that one. When do we get to play the Crimson Tide?
Well, unfortunately, they're not available this next fall. And honestly, our sole focus is trying to build a schedule for this fall, just given the timing. But it's been interesting. There have been programs reaching out that maybe need games or maybe need some of the games we don't need anymore. So it's been really interesting, and hopefully we'll have something together here in a couple weeks. But so Alabama is going to be a little bit further down the road.
You said yesterday during the press conference that you had a call with a national scheduling guru that was set for later in the day yesterday. Did that call give you some hope, Matt?
It definitely. I mean, I think both Todd Phelps and I came away from it a little more reassured. Now, we still have some work to do in terms of getting out of the games we have and making some things work. But this is something that he does all the time, and he really is. He's a magician, and in terms of he has relationships at every level with every program and really helps. I think when these types of situations happen or somebody loses a game late, trying to help. And so we came away yesterday, I think, very optimistic that, you know, hopefully over the course of the next couple of weeks, we'll be able to put something together.
Do you think, and I'm not going to try to badger you about who, but do you think there will be one of those non-conference, I guess you need, what, three or four non-conference games with eight schools in the conference? Is there any opportunities out there that you think, boy, this looks like it might come together and this would be really fun for Bison fans?
I don't want to. We need four games. We'll probably keep one of our current FCS games, one of those at home, but would love another home game and then probably two road games. I can't get into specifics yet just because it's really preliminary and we haven't had conversations with the schools themselves yet. So hopefully when we get our schedule out there, I can come back on with you and talk a little bit about the process and kind of start building excitement for the fall.
Sure. So what do you say? I mean, the biggest question I got yesterday here when people called or emailed was, we're not going to have any more national championships. How much fun is that going to be? What do you say to fans who say, gosh, it was kind of nice going to Frisco and winning a national championship every once in a while?
No, it definitely was. And what I've – and I probably would have answered this question differently 5 or 6 years ago when there were four teams playing for a national championship at the FBS level. It's expanded to 12. JMU, who, you know, we beat in the Fargo Dome in 21, was in it this year. And, you know, the goal is and the plan is probably to expand to 16 or 24. And so what I would say is I think the one thing that I would always want for our programs is that there's a path to compete for a national championship. And I think going this route in this league, there will be a path, there will continue to be a path in the future. And it's on us then. It's on us to compete at a really high level and position ourselves to have an opportunity. And to me, that's the biggest thing is, do we have an opportunity? In this case, we do. And that's what we're really excited about.
Matt, there's been some people who have taken a look at the current Mountain West schedules and said, okay, it looks like, so UNLV, for instance, all of their road games are kind of booked already. And so they can't really travel anymore. So it looks like NDSU is going to end up going there. Have you done any of that homework on the schedule, and do you know where you're going to be at and what you're going to have at home this next year?
So the conference schedule, the Mountain West, is going to completely reshuffle it now with 10 teams. So I know there were some games that were put out there initially with the 9 members, and now with the 10th, we're going to completely reshuffle it. So, again, I know in talking with the league, time is of the essence for them as well, and they want to get a conference schedule out as soon as they can. That also allows us to then really fine-tune and finalize our non-conference schedule. So they're working as we speak to get that out. So what you see at some of those other Mountain West schools for their conference games, those are all going to change.
Okay. Okay. Thank you for that. That's a very important clarification, because I think there were some Bison fans going, hey, we're going to Vegas this year, and it may not happen. Are you going to need to do something with the stadium, Matt, either expand it or build something new to comply with FBS rules and regulations?
There are no longer any minimum seating requirements, but, you know, that being said, I've been disappointed the last couple of times that we put forward a vote, or the city has put forward a vote to renovate the Fargo Dome. Fargo Dome has been a great home for Bison football. It's been an unbelievable community and state asset, but it's 32 years old, and it's really showing its age in terms of fan amenities, fan experience, operationally. There are some limitations to the facility, and so we would love to continue to beat the drum and move some sort of renovation of the Fargo Dome forward. And again, not just selfishly for Bison football, but concert goers or community events. We want our folks to have the same experience that they do when they go to Minneapolis and go to those events and those venues. And so there's definitely some work that needs to be done, no doubt about it. But we don't need a new building. I think the bones of the Fargo Dome are really good, but it definitely needs some upgrades.
Okay. If I heard you right, you wouldn't need necessarily to expand capacity there. You could play in the Fargo Dome for the foreseeable future.
That's correct.
Okay. On the probation period, so it's a two-year thing. We understand that. No bowls. You can't be in the college football playoff the way the rule stands right now. But I think there is a clause in there, and please correct me if I'm wrong. If there are not enough teams that are bowl eligible in FBS, basically they have a 500 record or better, which is usually the criteria, then you could potentially land in a bowl game this year?
That's correct. And we saw that rule play out this year with, folks will remember, Missouri State, who is in the Missouri Valley Football Conference, and also Delaware. Both schools in their first year of transition had more than six wins and were able to participate in bowls this year because there weren't enough other programs that were bowl eligible. So there's that opportunity. But I'm pretty determined to put a waiver on the whole two-year reclassification anyway. In my mind, that's an antiquated rule. It's overly punitive based on when it was put in place, maybe made a little more sense. A lot of things have changed since then. And so we're gonna fight that one pretty hard.
Okay. Well, there we go. I like that spirit. Now, so these schools that went before, like James Madison and Georgia Southern and those, when is the last time that had to be upheld? Because I assume when like James Madison went, they probably petitioned as well. So when is the last time that the NCAA actually looked at this?
It's probably been a while. The only thing they've looked at recently is increasing the fee to transition from $5,000 to $5 million. And so to me, that's one of the criteria. You know, part of the transition is to make sure there's a financially viable plan. Well, going from $5,000 to $5 million for the buy-in, to me, shows that the school is they're in a good financial position. This is something they're very serious about. And then the other thing that wasn't in place when they put the two-year ban in was the transfer portal. You know, so now you have a program who for 2 years isn't going to be eligible. You know, that potentially hurts them, and it's more punitive because if student athletes don't have the opportunity to compete, do they look to go somewhere else? So instead of strengthening the program and trying to make them as FBS ready as possible, I think you're doing damage to those schools. And so a lot of things have just changed. So in my mind, it's a rule that's incredibly outdated.
Hmm. Interesting. Have you gotten any feedback from anybody in major college football that says, hey, you might have a shot at this? I mean, what do you think your chances are?
Well, we got to become a member first. We're still going through that process. There's an application. The deadline is June 1st. So we're working on getting that done. So we're not officially FBS until we go through there. So we figure we'll get through that point, but it's something that I'll continue to talk to the conference about, and I'll talk to some folks nationally, because I think that's one of the things the NCAA has started to do over the last 2 years is really go through a lot of these rules, and there's some that still make sense and there's some that don't. At a minimum, I'm asking that they revisit it, because to me, it's incredibly outdated.
Yeah. Well, we wish you well on that one. That would be fun to see those opportunities come earlier. Matt, this obviously costs a lot more money. That's all been talked about, several million dollars more a year. What do you say to the taxpayer, the Fargo resident, who is wondering, okay, if they can't raise the money privately, is the public going to ultimately end up paying for this? Or maybe the professor who wonders, if not enough money is raised, is my science program going to get cut to pay for football? What do you say to those folks?
Well, I think the biggest thing, and I'll be honest, fundraising is going to be a big part of it. There's no doubt. But there's also a lot of revenue streams at the FBS level that just aren't made possible or available at the FCS level. And so there's going to be increased expenses, but there's a lot more revenue streams that we're going to have access and opportunity, in addition to some of the ones we currently have that we can augment now because of the different visibility that we're going to have, more national and regional visibility. So there's going to be some other revenues that we're going to generate. So it's not purely on fundraising, but fundraising is definitely a part of it.
Yeah. Last question, games against UND and South Dakota State, are they gone forever?
I don't know about gone forever. I mean, our goal is to still play an FCS game each year. Now, the likelihood of us going on the road for any of those games is not going to happen, but who knows? I mean, we haven't spent a lot of time talking about it, but there's certainly an opportunity.
Yeah, very good. Well, and you said yesterday, too, you'd like to continue doing some of that scheduling. Matt, I appreciate it very much. Thanks for doing this. I know you've answered a million questions over the last couple of days, so thanks for answering a few more.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.
Take care. Matt Larson, Athletic Director at North Dakota State University. Be back with more of the Steve Hallstrom Show right after this. Have you noticed how many Vision Fords and Vision Lincolns you're seeing here in the metro? I've got one of them. They make buying a car, truck, SUV easy, whether you're looking for something new or pre-owned. 15 minutes to get the paperwork done. Need an oil change? They'll actually drive up to town here, change the oil in the parking lot. They did it here at our building not long ago, one of the coldest days of the winter. They came out and did it, no problem. And they've got, if you need to get it down to the shop to do some work down there, they've got 18 service drivers that move vehicles up and down the interstate to make all those repairs happen. So they get you to your car to you, however it needs to happen. Go to drivewithvision.com to find out more. Drivewithvision.com. All their inventory is there. You can check out their job openings, too. All right, let's take a few questions that have come in here over the last few minutes or so. Steve, a bad part of this move for NDSU is a loss of statewide TV. Yeah, so the TV thing is going to be different. Radio should still kind of keep going the way they've been doing radio. And so that probably won't change, but TV, yes. So, my old colleagues over at WDAY TV have that agreement right now. And I'm sure it was written into the deal. Like, hey, if we move up to FBS, you're not going to be able to do the games anymore. And that's what happens at the FBS level. It's done by national contracts with Fox and ESPN and places like that. And so you're going to see those Mountain West games on like CBS Sports Network, which is a cable channel. Fox Sports 1, you know, they're not going to typically be on your CBS or your ESPNs, but kind of those second, I hate to call it that, but you know what I mean, second tier sports channels probably is where you go. But, you know, bowl game or, you know, the right game against non-conference team, you never know. You might get on the Big Ten Network or something like that. But, yeah, you're not going to be able to, you know, tune in to WDAY or WDAZ or, you know, out in Bismarck and watch the local teams do that anymore. That'll be done by national crews. Steve, will any scholarships open up? Yeah, that's one of the big things about this is you're going from 63 scholarships. It can be split up, half rides or a little bit here and a little bit there. So you can cover like 100 guys almost with that money. But, you know, your main guys are going to get full rides. Well, now it's 85 and they are all full rides. So you've got, and I want to say that maybe the 63, you can split them up 85 ways, but at the FBS level, you've got to fund all 65 or all 85 full ride scholarships. So that's the story on that. Another text, Steve, I think the ESPN showcase game versus Montana State is still on in 2027. You know, I went on the NDSU website to see what they have on their site for games, and they don't list a schedule past this year. And I don't know that they ever did, but they have a bunch of games out there. Like, there's a game with Oregon, I think, that's still on the books in 2028. My guess is that all of that sort of gets wiped away, like Matt was talking about the Mountain West schedule, kind of just being blown up there. So, that, you know, they're going to try to get, he said, we're going to try to get a game with the FCS, you know, here for the near future, maybe one game a year. And maybe they can do that without hurting their playoff ratings. I thought that the story was that when you're trying to get bowl eligible, or not so much bowl eligible, but for the college football playoff, that when you do that, you don't want FCS games, because even if you win, they don't count as much as beating a lower-level FBS team. So we'll have to see what happens. But Matt said that pretty openly yesterday, said it again today, that they still want to continue having FBS game or FCS opponents on the schedule. So that's interesting. And I think yesterday he said maybe one FCS. They've got four non-conference games every year. Maybe one FCS game, two games against other teams in other conferences, kind of like us, and then one big boy every year. So, yeah, I thought it was interesting. He said that, you know, that was a good call they had yesterday with the scheduling guru, and thinks they'll have a schedule out here maybe in a couple of weeks, which would be really fast for all that to come together. But I guess it is, you know, middle of February at this point. So, all right, let's see. While we're on the text line, let's keep rolling here. Steve, the accused swim coach broke USA swimming rules by being alone with an athlete. The accusations have very high veracity due to circumstances. Obviously, the victim needs privacy. This is a breakdown in the justice system. They have video evidence and law enforcement reports. There is adequate evidence to prosecute, and the state's attorney is too lazy to pursue this. The victim's need for privacy was the state's attorney's out to not do anything. Very interesting. I don't know enough about the legal process and how all this works. But yeah, I mean, you might be right about that. So thank you for sending that in there. And also, nope, there you go. That's a list of what's come in here on the text line. From the email line, or from the email box, studio@flagfamily.com. Steve, $37 million is the price they're talking about for that overpass in West Fargo. Yeah, we haven't talked about this story yet. I need to get my head around it a little bit more, because I just don't know enough about it to speak intelligently about it here. But emailer Dan says, it's a sparsely populated industrial area in West Fargo. Is this to make building a new dome on NDSU's land by the Equestrian Center more attractive? One thing I've learned about West Fargo, particularly the school district, is that West Fargo leadership never spends money without a bigger and better project already in mind that they keep hidden, rather than showing voters what the end grand total will be. Yeah, I don't know if it's something related to NDSU and football, although you can tell Matt's getting ready to push for something for the new stadium. And this might be what they need to get it done. We'll see how that plays out in time. All right, the Key 3 coming up next. This hour of the program brought to you in part by Capstone Classical Academy, where they believe cultural renewal begins with education. Forming wise and virtuous young men and women who love what is true, good, and beautiful, and you can support the effort. Go online right now to givingheartsday.org and search Capstone to make your tax-deductible gift for Giving Hearts Day. Capstone, rigorous academic studies within a Christian worldview. From the text line, Steve, are colleges and universities not allowed to do in-house broadcasts that could be live-streamed of football games? No. Now at the FBS level, it is all part of these nationwide TV deals they have. So you see now, like, a lot of the games, if it's not on TV somewhere, it'll be on like ESPN Plus or Fox Sports Now or something like that. So yeah, the NDSU cannot do that in, they can't make their own money off of their video stream. So yeah, there's a few of those things that are a little different. It is Division I football, whether you're talking about FCS or FBS, but it is a different world. That's why it's costing you $5 million to move up, because it's not Division I football the way most people think of it as Division I football. FCS is its own wonderful thing, but it just does not have that kind of brand power. And along with that goes the other things, like you can't do your own streaming, and you don't have your own local TV crews doing the games anymore, things like that. So keep the questions coming. We'll do the best we can to poke away at all of those here. All right, it's time for the key three, and these are what I believe to be the three most important stories when you talk about the impact that they have on our community, maybe telling a story about an issue, how the world is changing a little bit, or maybe an important topic that bears that deserves more conversation. That's what I put in the key three. And story number one, this is one that I keep hearing about in North Dakota. And I'll have to ask Julie Fedorchuk when we have her on in a few minutes here. But the United States, President Trump put out the executive order that just a couple days ago, that the U.S. will increase imports of lean beef from Argentina to alleviate high beef prices. The executive order says that they are going to bump imports by 80,000 metric tons as beef prices have gone up as a result of many different things. I'm reading a story from a website called Farm Week Now that had a pretty good summary of this. And they say beef prices are on the rise because of droughts, wildfires, import restrictions from Mexico, and other factors. I would also say we just don't have a supply. A lot of guys, when the droughts were bad, oh, this is drought, sold their stock not long ago. When prices are high, you probably get your cattle to market a little sooner. And because of all of that, beef prices are fairly high. There's not enough. And the cattle herd has fallen to a record low of 86.2 million head in January of 2026. Beef cow inventory down by 8.6% since 2020. So these the products coming in, as I'm reading this, this is something I didn't know. They're not bringing in steaks. They're bringing in ground beef, sausages, or lean beef trimmings. So I guess it's not, you know, you're not going to get your filet that way, but you might get your hamburger that way. Beef, an average price of $6.69 a pound, and that's the highest since the Department of Labor started tracking beef prices in the 1980s. So, you know, you've got this back and forth now. The ranchers in our state and others, well, here's a quote. Executive director of the NCBA, which is the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, is a gentleman named Kent Backus, and he says, while we fundamentally disagree with the premise that increased imports can lower beef prices, NCBA is encouraged to see the Trump administration take necessary steps to address longstanding market access challenges for U.S. beef in Argentina. So, yeah, this is kind of a weird thing. You've got, I guess, exports going both ways on this whole deal there. And I've heard a number of other ranchers say, too, like, can the Trump administration just try to fight the cost of all the inputs? I mean, everything is so dang high right now. Why is it to get a crop to feed our cattle? Why is that so high? Fertilizers and chemicals and all that. Can we work on any of those things? So that's story number one. Story number two, this is a story that I mentioned earlier. This is one of those, this story isn't really fair stories. Every once in a while, you'll hear me say, here's a paragraph 10 story where I say, okay, the real thing you need to know is buried way down deep in the story. I might have to start another like occasional series called Stories That Aren't Really Fair. This is one of them. A West Fargo man is facing a felony charge after allegedly leaving a threatening voicemail at a Fargo Walmart that included threats to bring a bomb and weapon into the store. Story goes on to talk about Valley News Live doing the reporting here that the local guy basically called and said, I'm going to bring a bomb. I'm going to shoot everybody up. Left a bunch of profanities on there. And they've got the guy in custody now. He's being charged with terrorizing with a dangerous weapon. He is being held at Cass County Jail. The reason this story isn't fair is that you kind of have to report. I'm not saying Valley News Live did anything they shouldn't have done here. You kind of have to report like where this happened. You can't say, yeah, at a local business. But it's really kind of unfair to Walmart. Because next time I go to Walmart, I'm going to be thinking, I wonder if there's a bomb scare. Now, it's probably just some Looney Tune guy who was strung up on something or another that decided to make a memory. But even so, I think for people that shop at these places, man, you don't want, if you're Walmart, you don't want this story out there. You just don't. It's kind of like when you see a mugshot of somebody in the news and the guy's wearing a t-shirt that says, oh, I don't even know, Jim's Auto or whatever, okay? So some guy named Jim running his business, he's got this, or a band that's got, you know, the band, he's wearing a band shirt when he got booked, and it's just, it's not fair to them. It really isn't, but there's not really much you can do about it. So the other thing I think about with this story is that this kid, Tristan Fitzgerald, 20 years old, from West Fargo, what happened to him along the way? I always think, you know, I get mad at the crime, first of all, and then I think, what in the world happened? Like, what did you think was going to happen if you did this? Like, they weren't going to find you somehow? And why is your life that miserable? You got to call in a bomb threat. You kind of feel bad for the guy in a small way. All right, and story number three, I'm giving you numbers here that I'm not happy about, but I'm giving you them because I think it's important that we have the honest truth. I guess like there is any other kind of truth, but it's important for us to have honest numbers because I've seen some things on social media that say, hey, if you take a look at what Turning Point USA got for, you know, the initial viewing of the halftime show, and then you add up all the replays, it's as many people as watch the NFL's halftime show. Well, I don't know that that's true. The NFL says that it has now, through midnight last night, that it has 232 million views of the Bad Bunny halftime show, the one they did on Sunday. 135 million households in the country were watching, had the game on, and then 97 million of them, or 97 million other people, played it later on YouTube or something else. So they got 232 million. Turning Point USA said at the peak, we had 11 million viewing on the different platforms, and we've had about 10 million on the replays. Now, I did not get that right from Turning Point. I will be honest enough to tell you, I got that from like a Bloomberg Media something. So unless they're lying, which they don't typically lie that way, they've had about 21 million. So 232 million versus 21 million. So I really want those numbers to be very similar. In fact, I'd love it if it were the other way around, where everybody turned off the game and turned on Turning Point at halftime. I have been pleasantly surprised to hear so many people who I didn't even really kind of know what they think about the world saying something like, yeah, we turned it off. We watched the Turning Point thing. Oh, cool. So, look, can I shoot holes in any of this? Maybe. If you got the game on, which everybody had the game on, but then like what we did is we turned on Turning Point and watched that at halftime. But did we still have the NFL game on somewhere in the house? We might have on one of the TVs because I was in one room, Trace was in another at the time, and we might have had one of each on. You know what I mean? So it's like how many people were watching, not how many people had the TV on. Maybe the numbers are a little bit less than what the NFL is telling you. They can measure their replays. I'm not going to accuse anybody of being dishonest here, but I do think you've got to say, look, 21 million people, and there's going to be how many others who are going to continue to watch? It probably gets 40, 50 million views by the time it's all said and done. That's not nothing. And it sounds like they're encouraged and happy about it. I'm glad they are. I hope they keep doing it because we need an alternative to the garbage that we see that sometimes gets pushed down your throat. So I love all of that. When we return on the Steve Hallstrom Show, best thing I heard all day comes from the Olympics. Every week at this time, we get a little smarter thanks to our friend Chris Buckingham at Solve CXO. Teaches us a little bit about business, a little bit about technology. It's always a good chat. Hey, Chris, how are you doing?
Good morning, Steve. I'm doing great.
So talking a little bit about the value gap here today, and we know a lot of things go into building your business or growing it something bigger than what it was when you started. When a business owner is ready to retire or sell a company, I know there are a lot of times when the seller is not able to get all the money that they're entitled to, all the worth out of it. And so you get this gap between selling price and the actual value. Tell us more about this.
Yeah, from my experience, and I know that I left some money on the table when I sold my company too, but most owners leave 20 to 40% of their company value on the table when they sell. So one of the gaps between what they think it's worth and what buyers actually pay comes down to not just the financials, but also the operational excellence of the company.
So tell us more, what do you mean by operational excellence?
So So if your business depends on you to make every decision, close every deal, solve every problem, buyers see this as a massive risk. You are the operating system of the business. They want to buy a system. And if that system falls apart without you, the value can drop significantly.
So what's the difference then between a business that commands a premium and then one that gets discounted at sale time?
Operational alignment with your systems, clear roles, documented processes. The team can run without constant over oversight. That's so important. And when the business runs on operational efficiency and excellence instead of heroics, buyers see a scalable, transferable asset, and that is worth more money.
I've heard people say this that have sold a business. They've said, you know, one of the things that's kind of weird is we built this great company, and the people that are buying it, they never ask, how did you do it? And that's exactly what you're talking about here. And I know you've got a workshop coming up that talks about this very thing.
Yeah, March 3rd here in Fargo. It's called The Hidden Drivers of Business Value. It's a free lunch and learn where we show owner-operators exactly what buyers are looking for. And it's not if they need to buy, they're looking to sell in the next year, 3 years, 5 years. It's always making the decisions with selling or exiting in mind.
Yeah, good stuff. Great advice. And this sounds like it's going to be a great seminar. And you can find out more about the company at solvecxo.com. Chris is our vision to action leader over there at Solve CXO, helping business owners turn their vision into action. Thanks a lot for the visit, Chris. Have a great day.
You too, Steve.
Take care. 23 past the hour here from the text line. Steve, I heard Turning Point had between 40 and 50 million views for its halftime show. That was from Turning Point itself. Well, I heard Andrew Colvin say they think they're going to have that when, you know, as time goes on, that they'll ultimately have that. I've not seen that number actual recordings, but I'll keep looking at that. Thank you for the reminder there, because it's good to keep our eyes out on and continue to add those things there. So another text, Steve, look up Apple Music that sponsored the Super Bowl and find out which two songs are one and two as far as music bought from Apple. Oh, I think I know this. I think it's Till You Can't, Kid Rock's version, and Till You Can't, Cody Johnson's, the original version. Is that right? Tell me, shoot me back, because I think I saw that, those are the number two there. Let's see. Okay, that was something we talked about already, so we're good there on text in there today. Keep them coming, 701-237-1590. Here from the Drive with Vision studio, drivewithvision.com, Vision Ford Lincoln in Wappington. 15 minutes or less. Buy a beautiful new or pre-owned car, truck, or SUV. All right, it's time for Best Thing I Heard All Day. And I would say that, as I've told you, I'm mildly interested in the Olympics. I'm not addicted to it, but I did watch some of this curling match, the doubles team from Duluth, that knocked out the defending, I think, Olympic gold medalists and the defending world champs last night from Italy. So the home fans were disappointed about that. I saw something on social media, and then they were replaying that match last night, so I did watch that for a little while last night. But I've gotten so discouraged with all of this anti-American stuff coming from some of the athletes there, and the Olympics itself are always a little woke, and I'm like, I don't know. It's hard for me to get into it. Now, when they start playing the hockey games, I'll probably watch a little more, so maybe I'm just kind of a fair-weather fan. But I have been looking for things on social media where you have people who are playing, athletes who are playing, that say, I'm proud to be an American, like we had the women's wrestler from the 2020 Olympics. And I found one yesterday from Matthew Tkachuk. He is one of the most decorated players in the NHL, a guy who's won a couple, I believe, Stanley Cup champions, a perennial all-star. He's playing on Team USA. And he said, I don't care what anybody else says. I love the good old USA and love playing for the red, white, and blue.
I mean, this is being able to represent the U.S. at this stage in the Olympics is one of the greatest honors that I've ever had. So I'm truly grateful to be here representing the red, white, and blue.
I think it kind of means the world. It's really like a whirlwind of emotions, flying here this morning, hanging out in the village all day, and then, you know, getting fitted for our clothes and, you know, just meeting athletes and then coming here and practicing. And now it's so like, oh my gosh, like day one's over. Like, it's kind of crazy. So, really enjoying the experience so far and having a lot of fun.
Okay. So not everybody says, I hate America. I hate Donald Trump. We're mean to the certain people. Stolen land. You're not hearing that from everybody. And it's important to remember, sometimes these things get our irritations up a little bit, but probably it's just a few. But seriously, if you hate the country, then you go back home. If you're so oppressed, go back home and sell all your stuff and move to somewhere else. As far as the medal count goes, Norway leads right now with 11. I love that Norway is the bomb when it comes to the Winter Olympics. They actually end Italy tied at 11. Norway has 6 golds so far. So after you get past Norway and Italy, in second place is Japan. And then the U.S. is tied with like 5 or 6 other countries with 5. 2 gold medals, 2 silvers, and 1 bronze. But did you watch any of that curling match last night? The Corys from Duluth? That was really fun. And that is a I've only curled one time, and it's a ton of fun. And I could see myself definitely getting into it. Now, most like beginning curling things, you're not sweeping. You're just kind of throwing the rock down there. But it's pretty fun. And the strategy and how precise it is really fun. And when you get that rock, the big, you know, sliding slab of granite that lands in the target area, which they call the kitchen, if they get it right in the right spot in the bullseye there, it's super fun and pretty exciting there. So having a good time watching that. They have guaranteed themselves a medal, either a silver or a gold. And I'm not sure when they'll play, but I know that this is mixed doubles, and then there's singles and, you know, team women's and whatever. So my guess is they'll play again fairly soon to get that done, because they got other matches that they're going to be taking part in. So fun stuff there. And a good job, Matthew Tkachuk. There are some good Patriots over there in the Winter Olympics. All right, when we return, Congresswoman Julie Fedorchuk, our monthly visit with her. I made you a promise that I was going to ask any elected official at the Congress level, Senate, House of Representatives, about the SAVE Act and how they are voting on it. And so we'll do that with Julie. She's been behind it. So we'll talk to her about that and the vote on funding last week. That's coming up next. Getting a full new smile in one day takes more than skill. It takes passion, training, and the right technology. Dr. Matt Eaton at Dakota Implant and Sedation Center has extensive training in implant dentistry. He uses advanced 3D imaging, digital planning, and in-house technology, and each smile is carefully planned before treatment even begins. Many patients are able to walk out the same day with a strong, natural-looking, full smile. A compassionate team, a comfortable experience, and financing options available. If you've been told implants take months, it may be time for a second opinion. Go to Dakota Implant and Sedation Center in Fargo, dakotaimplant.com. Smile like you mean it. All right, I have good news, friend. I have 4 pair of tickets to the showing that we're doing tonight at West Acres Theater of Melania, the Melania Trump documentary. And I have 4 pairs of tickets, and we're going to give them out. Let's do caller 3, 4, 5, and 6 here. And Addison's not happy with me because he's expecting a call from Julie Fedorchuk any minute. But if you call and you don't hear from Addison, hang on, because he's probably answering another phone call. So 3, 4, 5, and 6. And it's tonight at 6:30. Free to you and free popcorn. My standing offer is this as well to you, that if you come from west of Bismarck, anywhere west of Bismarck, that I will pay for your pop. I'll buy you a soda too. So there you go on that. I know it's a bit of a trip, but it's going to be a ton of fun, and I think we're going to all enjoy watching that great movie together tonight. So tonight at 6:30, most of our spots are claimed. This is going to be the last giveaway here on our show because it's tonight, obviously. 6:30 at West Acres Cinema. 4 pairs of tickets available for you. Okay. All right. So from the text line, Steve, curling, they call it a Bonspiel. Sounds like such a wonderful place to be. Yes. I curled one time when I was living in Minot and had an absolute blast doing that. It was really fun. And it's like everything. You see them do it on TV and you think, oh, well, that sounds simple or looks simple. And then you get out there and do it. And either you throw it like 3 feet and it just stops, or you throw it like 300 feet and crack the back wall. It's really tricky to get the speed just right on that thing. So it's tough to do. And then, of course, at the professional level, the higher level, they're sweeping it. And in the sweeping, as I understand it, it creates friction, which melts, gives a little bit of heat to the ice and helps the rock slide a little further down there. So it is a it's a tricky thing, but it's really fun to watch. And it looks like really simple, but it's like beanbags with a lot more behind it, because you have to you got to make sure that if the rock bumps another one, you might be bumping your own rock out of the target area, and you don't want that. So always an interesting but fun adventure. If you have not tried it before, I would say everybody should do it one time. All right, we are pleased to welcome to the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line Congresswoman Julie Fedorchuk, serving our great state of North Dakota out in Washington, D.C., and she's always kind enough to give us a little bit of time once a month to chat about what's happening out in our nation's capital. Hi, Julie. How are you?
Great to be with you, Steve. Thank you for the invitation this morning.
I was watching one of the news channels earlier today, and it looks like North Dakota. They're all bundled up, and there's snow on the ground. And, you know, when you get out of North Dakota this time of year, you're hoping you get better weather, but it's been a little chilly out there, huh?
It's actually been colder here than in North Dakota, because
there's been a nice spell
at home. Mm. So, no, it's definitely, they have about probably 8 to 10 inches of snow that's just stuck here. So everyone's I know. It's not so bad, though.
We've got to get rid of this global boiling or whatever they've been talking about. We could use a little global warming right about now. Julie, I want to ask you, probably the number one topic that I'm getting from people who are watching the national trends right now on national stories is about voter ID and how concerned people are going into the midterms about the shenanigans that may very well happen, especially in blue states and blue cities. I know that you have been a big backer of the SAVE Act. You voted for that bill in the House when it came through last summer, I think it was. The bill ended up stalling out in the Senate, so we need to have some words over there, too. But some House reps said last week when it came to that spending bill that if the SAVE Act wasn't in there, that they wouldn't go for it. So tell me a little bit about your position on this, because please correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't believe that you took that position and said, if we don't get SAVE Act in the spending bill, I'm not voting for it. So tell us a little bit about where you're at on that whole thing right now.
Well, I was very excited to pass and support the SAVE Act last summer. And I do wish that the Senate would figure out how to get over the filibuster, do the talking filibuster, and get some of these important pieces of legislation through. We're taking up the Save America Act. It's very similar to the SAVE Act, only it goes, the SAVE Act requires an ID to vote in the election, a federal election. The Save America Act requires people to show a ID to register to vote, so that they are, you know, in North Dakota, you don't have to register to vote, but in other states, every other state you do. So they'd have to show an ID to become an eligible voter, and then they'd also have to show a photo ID to vote. In North Dakota, we won't see much difference by these acts because we already require all of this. We have proof of citizenship baked into our election laws in North Dakota. Other states do not. And so this is why I think people are so upset about and so committed to this bill, because people, it's common sense. You can go to the grocery store and pick up a prescription, or at the pharmacist, you have to show an ID. You want to rent a car? You got to show an ID. Board a flight? Get out your ID.
Mm-hmm.
You want to get an ear piercing? Show your ID.
Buy
a beer. Donate blood. Rent a hotel. You know, all of these things are, we just commonly have to show an ID. If you want to buy cough medicine, you have to show an ID. But you can show up at a polling place and vote in an election in many, many states throughout this country and not show an ID. And Americans see that as wrong. is common sense. It's one of our greatest rights as an American citizen. It's something that is held only for American citizens. And so we should have to prove that you are an American citizen before you cast a ballot in an election. That's what the Save America Act does. And I'm quite confident we will pass it today in the House, and then we will be pushing it over to the Senate and really advocating for them to get it through and get it to President Trump's desk to sign it into law.
Are you getting any sense of what the tea leaves look like in the Senate? Do you think it goes through?
Well, I don't think they'll get the Democrats to support it. I think they'd have to do the, is it called the talking filibuster, where it's a filibuster as was originally designed in Senate rules, to be honest, where you would require people to actually speak on the floor of the Senate in order to maintain the filibuster. And so there's talk that they're going to use that and bring back that rule and require that if the Democrats want to filibuster this, they have to do it in a talking filibuster, and that there's hope that that would be able to break the logjam there and get it passed. So I don't know. I don't have a lot of insights into what the Senate process is, unfortunately.
Excuse me, had a cough that came out of nowhere there. Julie, the polling on this is really high, and I saw on CNN they've been talking about this even, that voter ID polls very high even among all classes of people, basically, all different races, all different groups. This polls very high, so it's something that seems like, okay, this might be the time, you know, when we've got a majority in the House and Senate and the presidency, this might be the time to do it. And I just personally don't know if there's a bigger issue in our country right now going into a midterm year than this one. That being said, do you foresee a point in time down the road, let's say this doesn't get, Save America Act doesn't get through the Senate, and here we are, you know, just at a kind of an impasse again, do you foresee a time when you'd be willing to, I don't want to say die on that hill, but I guess die on that hill when it comes to funding and say, no, I'm not going to vote for any more spending deals until, you know, we get this, some form of the voter ID thing done. Is it important enough where you'd say, okay, at some point it is important enough that we shut the government down over this?
Well, you know, I guess we'll cross that bridge when it comes. I'm hopeful we've got a great bill here and we've got some great strategies for getting it passed. And I'm hopeful that, you know, we will do that. We won't need to resort to those kinds of measures, but I'll, you know, take a look at any strategy that we think is needed to get this kind of common sense reform passed. I do want to mention, Steve, a couple of points that I have recently learned. To your point about how popular it is, Georgia a few years back passed comprehensive election reform, and they have found since then that voter participation is actually increased considerably, and the satisfaction with the process is very, very high. In fact, the University of Georgia did a study and found that in all of the sort of groups that you would think would have been sort of opposed to this, especially their African American population in Georgia, there was zero expressed concerns over the new requirements in the law. Your point again about how popular this is, people want to have confidence in our election process that it's safe and fair. And this is one of the best ways to do that. And so why a Democrat in the Senate would oppose this is beyond me. And anybody who's electing Democrats in the Senate who like might be in Minnesota and listening to your show ought to be thinking twice about those votes.
Yes.
Like, why would Smith and Amy Klobuchar be opposed to this? Why? What reason would it be? There's no justification for it. So, you know, there's a lot of false information out there that it's going to impact women when they have their name changed and all this. All of that is false. I have talked directly with Michael Howe, our Secretary of State in North Dakota, who assures us people will see no difference.
Okay. Thanks, Julie. Short break here. When we come back on the other side, we'll continue this conversation with Congresswoman Fedorchuk as well. And we're going to talk about one of the things that She was criticized on this show last week by Alex Blas about missing votes. We're going to give her a chance to give her side of that story and set the record straight on that. We'll do all that when we come back on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Don't go away. We are very thankful to Congresswoman Julie Fedorchuk. She gives us time once a month and takes time out of her day for about a half hour to talk with us here about what's going on in D.C. And Congresswoman, we appreciate it very much. I want to make sure I understood the last question or the last answer you gave me. I asked, is there a scenario under which someday when it comes to a spending bill where you're like, okay, I've got to stand up my ground on this voter ID thing in some way, and there may be a time when it's worth shutting the government down over this issue? And I'm sorry that I think I missed your answer on that. Can you give us a clear statement? Is there a scenario out there under which you'd say, yes, this should affect a spending bill, or would you see this differently?
Well, it's hard for me to talk about something that, you know, the circumstances around which I don't know. So it depends on the spending bill. It depends on, you know, how, what would be impacted by the spending bill. Would it shut down the government? You know, all those sorts of things. This is a high priority. It's a very important priority. But I can't say that I would choose this over a different priority without knowing what that other thing is. And so I would look carefully at the situation at the time and make the best judgment that I think would be consistent with what North Dakotans would expect and support.
Understood. I had Alex Blas on the program last week, and he has entered the race for the Republican nomination, so he'll be in the primary with you. One of his I said, hey, is there anything you can point to where you'd say, you know, Congresswoman Fedorchuk has not done what she should, has fallen short in any way? And he said, you know, overall, he said, I don't have a lot to say here, but he said, I am concerned that she missed in her first term something like 13 votes. And I apologize to yourself and Alex if I'm missing that number, but it was something in the low double digits, like you missed 13 votes there. And he claimed that that was a pretty big deal. And I thought it only fair to give you a chance to respond on that since he made it seem like a pretty big deal.
So there's been about 400 votes since I've been sworn in as North Dakota's representative. I've missed 10 votes, and a majority of those votes were because of my daughter's wedding last summer. I worked with leadership ahead of time because, you know, there was a lot going on, and I wanted to make sure that my absence for her wedding wasn't going to put us in a bind or jeopardize an important vote. They knew well aware of my absences and coordinated the bills that were going to be up during that time to ensure that nothing of consequence was going to be jeopardized by my absence. And so, yeah, I mean, I did miss some as a result of that, but it's my only daughter's wedding, and the wedding was in our backyard, and it was set long before I even was elected to this office, the date was. So there was really very little I could do about that and had to, you know, put first things first, ultimately, for that instance, such a milestone occurrence, my daughter's wedding, I felt was a priority. But again, worked with leadership. They knew well about it. Nothing was jeopardized. And we were back in session the next week and passed the one big, beautiful bill. So that's what my response would be. I think my vote rate is like 97%. Of votes I've cast, and it's something I think is very important. It's ultimately my top priority when I'm out in D.C. is making sure I'm showing up for votes and prepared to vote, and it's something I take very seriously.
Got it. Fair being fair, is there anything where you would like to look at the campaign or claims that Alex Blas has made in the campaign or any, like, issues or positions he has that you would like to issue a criticism on?
You know, quite honestly, Steve, I haven't really been paying very much attention to Alex and what he's saying. We have so much going on here, so many great things that we're getting done, and so many issues of consequence we're working on, be it, you know, the election integrity or ag policy, energy policy, tax policy. So, you know, I'm really focused on delivering results for North Dakotans and not focused on what Alex may or may not be saying.
Fair enough. WTI crude oil back in the mid-60s. I know your time in the Public Service Commission, you spent a lot of time interacting with the energy industry. As you take a look at that number, it seems like that's maybe a little bit of a sweeter spot where the industry can do okay, but gas prices seem like they're still reasonable for people who have to put gas in the tank. What are your thoughts on kind of where that stands and your just impressions on that industry right now?
Well, I'm obviously in close contact with our friends in the energy sector, and we definitely like to see a higher price of oil in to support production in North Dakota. There's a lot of factors that impact that international price, but we'd like to, I would personally like to see it higher so we can have both reasonable gas prices and good production in North Dakota, like you stated.
Very good. Julie, I appreciate the time very much, and thanks again for giving us a few minutes here today. All the best, and thanks for taking the time.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you. Congresswoman Julie Fedorchak checking in from D.C. I wish I had another minute or so. I would have asked her about the president's executive order. She's been, I'll say this, she stood up for North Dakota ranchers pretty strong on the beef imports, and she's not a fan of that. So we talked about her that last time, but that was the executive order that came out not too long ago. All right, stay tuned. Scott Henn, the What's on Your Mind program coming up here in just a few minutes. Have a great day, my friend, wherever you're listening to me today from, and keep on flying that flag. Take care.